Please.
Habakkuk, then Zephaniah, then Haggai. It's before Zechariah. Haggai, I'll read chapter 1. In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts, saying, This people say, The time is not come, the time that Jehovah's house should be built. Then came the word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet, saying, Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways. Ye have sown much, and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain, and bring wood, and build the house. And I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith Jehovah of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Therefore the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Then Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua the son of Jozadak the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of Jehovah their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as Jehovah their God had sent him. And the people did fear before Jehovah. Then spake Haggai, Jehovah's messenger, in Jehovah's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith Jehovah. And Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of Jehovah of hosts, their God. In the 24th day of the sixth month, in the second year of Darius the king. Notice that the word comes to Haggai in the first day of the month, and in the very last verse, in the 24th day of the sixth month, that's when Jehovah stirs up the spirit of Zerubbabel and Joshua, and the people begin to work. What we're seeing in this, actually the entire book of Haggai is a little picture of the tribulation period. We're only going to look at chapter 1 today. But again, after 23 days, at the end of 23 days, they begin to work again. And that's a picture of the first part of the tribulation period. And we know that at the end of that first period, that first part of that tribulation period, the end of that 2300 days, that began on Pentecost in 1994. That's when the Lord poured out His Holy Spirit again, and God's people began to work again, and God began to save again. But let's talk about this a little bit. This is actually after the official tribulation period had ended. This takes place in the second year of Darius the king, is actually 520 B.C., We know that the official tribulation period began in 609 B.C. at the death of Josiah, the last good king of Judah, and went for 70 years, 23 years inclusive. Later, in 587 B.C., the temple was destroyed. But finally, in 539 B.C., 70 years later, after 609 B.C., the Israelites went back, or some of them did, to begin to rebuild that temple. They're going back. The Lord brought back their captivity again. They went back to their own land. You can in Daniel, you can read this in Daniel 9. That 70-year tribulation period had been prophesied by Jeremiah. He told the Israelites that they were going to be 70 years in a foreign land. And again, that's a picture of this tribulation period. It prefigured this tribulation period that we're coming to the end of right now, which began in 1988 and which will end on May the 21st. In Daniel 9, verse 1, we read, "In the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem." How did Daniel understand by books? He studied the Bible, and God opened his eyes to what was happening. That tribulation period began in 609 B.C. and ended in 539 B.C. That's 70 years. Now, again, back here in Haggai, this is after that tribulation period has ended, but we still see tribulation here. A lot of the Israelites are still in foreign lands. The temple is in ruins. In 539 B.C., a contingent of them went back and began to rebuild that temple, but their work was stopped by the people of the land. We'll look at that in a moment. But we read in verse 1 of Haggai 1, "The word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest." Now, both of these men are figures of Christ. Zerubbabel would be the governor of Judah, and Joshua is the high priest, and the word of Jehovah is coming to them through the prophet. All four of these names have to do with salvation, or coming, being brought out of Babylon, as it were. Zerubbabel, the word Zerubbabel means to descend from, or to flow from, or to come out, to come from Babylon. Zerubbabel is the son of Shealtiel. Shealtiel, the word Shealtiel means asked or petitioned or obtained leave of God. Joshua, it's the same word as Jesus in the New Testament. It means Jehovah freed or delivered or saved. And Jozadak, Joshua is the son of Jozadak, means Jehovah righted or justified or cleansed or turned to righteousness. So all four of these names have to do with salvation, and being brought out of Babylon is a picture of salvation. So that's the sense of this in the first place. The Israelites are being brought out of tribulation, being brought out of Babylon, and coming back into their own land. We read in verse 2 of Haggai 1, "Thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts, saying, This people say, the time is not come, the time that Jehovah's house should be built." Now, if you go back to Ezra 1, we'll see what's happening here and what that's all about. If you read in the opening verse of Ezra, we read, "Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia," this would be 539 B.C., when the Medes and the Persians came in and defeated Babylon, and this is officially the end of the tribulation period, the captivity of the Israelites. "Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of Jehovah by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled." There it is again. "Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing, saying, Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, Jehovah God of heaven hath given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he hath charged me to build him an house at Jerusalem, which is in Judea. Who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of Jehovah God of Israel. He is the God which is in Jerusalem. He's commanding that they go back and begin to build that temple again. Then if you go to chapter 3 of Ezra, in verse 8, they got started. It took them a little while. They got started on a building. In chapter 3, verse 8, we read, "Now in the second year of their coming unto the house of God at Jerusalem, in the second month began Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel and Jeshua the son of Josedech and the remnant of their brethren, the priests and the Levites, and all they that were come out of the captivity unto Jerusalem, and appointed the Levites from 20 years old and upward to set forward the work of the house of Jehovah." In other words, they began to build. And this would be 537 B.C. now. It's the second year of their coming in the second month. So in 537 B.C., they began to build again. But now, if you look in Ezra 4, we read that the people of the land hindered their building. In Ezra 4, verse 1, we read, "Now when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the children of the captivity builded the temple unto Jehovah God of Israel, then they came to Zerubbabel and to the chief of the fathers and said unto them, Let us build with you, for we seek your God as ye do, and we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, king of Asher, which brought us up hither." That would be the king of Assyria. And he had placed these foreigners in that land of Judah when they went into captivity. Verse 3 says, "But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said unto them, Ye have nothing to do with us to build an house unto our God, but we ourselves together will build unto Jehovah God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, hath commanded us." But verse 4 says, "Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building," and they actually got that work stopped. But look there in verse 4, it says, "Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah." We're talking about in Israel, back in Israel, the promised land, and the people of the land are weakening the Jews in building that temple again. And this is what we're seeing. The land now, which is a representation of the kingdom of God, has foreigners in it, people that aren't true Jews. It's a picture of tares in the church, and they're actually hindering the building of that temple. Now, all through time, God is building a house. He's building that house of the true believers, and God's people are spoken of actually as builders. Look at 1 Corinthians 3. In 1 Corinthians 3, in verse 9, we read, 1 Corinthians 3, 9, "For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's building. According to the grace of God which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire," and so forth. But God's people are being used to build that house. Look at Hebrews chapter 3. In Hebrews chapter 3, it's actually talking about Moses, comparing him to Christ. In Hebrews chapter 3, in verse 3, speaking of Christ, it says, "For this man was counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he who hath builded the house hath more honor than the house." Moses actually represented the church there. He brought the law. But this is saying that Christ Jesus had much more honor than Moses. But we read in verse 4, "For every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. And Moses verily was faithful in all his house as a servant, for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken after. but Christ as a son over his own house. Whose house are we if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end? Again, that house being built is the true believers. And God all through time has been building that house. He uses his people. Now we're at the end of the tribulation period here, and God's people again have returned, and they are attempting to start building this house again. Now, if you go to, let me see where we are here. Well, in 1 Kings, we read about Solomon building that temple. Again, it's the same picture there. He's a picture of the church, and he's being used now to build that temple of God when they built that tabernacle in the wilderness. Again, this the same picture. Psalm 127 starts out in verse 1, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. But that's the house that's being spoken of here. God's people have returned now to the promised land to build that house, and they're now being hindered by the people of the land. Look at Psalm 37. We know from in Genesis 17 and other chapters that Abraham was given that physical land of Canaan over there, but it was simply a picture of the kingdom of God, and always has been. But in Psalm 37, verse 3, we read, trust in Jehovah and do good, so shalt thou dwell in the land, and verily thou shalt be fed. Look at verse 34 of Psalm 37. Wait on Jehovah and keep his way, and he shall exalt thee to inherit the land. And that's salvation. When the wicked are cut off, thou shalt see it. So the people of the land now have hindered the Israelites in trying to build that temple again. And that's what it's talking about here in Haggai 1, verse 2. Thus speaketh Jehovah of hosts, saying, this people say the time is not come, the time that Jehovah's house should be built. It's as if they're saying, no, it's not the time now. There's so much opposition, we can't do it. So we read in verse 3 of Haggai 1, then came the word of Jehovah by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? And through this book of Haggai, we can see where God is speaking both to the unsaved in the church and to his elect. But the Israelites were dwelling in their own sealed houses, but the house of God still was in ruins. It still laid waste. And again, this is a picture. I mean, in the corporate church, they're out there in beautiful, some of these beautiful edifices in these churches. They're in their houses, but God is not there. Look at, just to get an idea of this word sealed and what it's speaking of here, look at Jeremiah 22. Jeremiah 22, verse 13. God is speaking to the Israelites in their rebellion, in their apostasy, in their falling away, in their turning to Baal, and in their false teachings, the priests and prophets who are leading the people astray. Jeremiah 22, verse 13 says, woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages, and giveth him not for his work. This that saith, I will build me a wide house and large chambers, and cutteth him out windows, and it is sealed, same word, it's sealed with cedar and painted with vermilion. And this is actually looking at the corporate churches. Today they're building these beautiful churches, but they've built them by unrighteousness. But they're sealed with cedar and painted with vermilion. In other words, they're beautiful. So that's what we're talking about here in Haggai 1 verse 4, where he says, where God says to the Israelites, is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, your beautiful houses, while this house lies waste? It's desolate. Go back to Jeremiah 33, and we'll get an idea of this word waste and what it's talking about. In Jeremiah 33, and again, almost the entire book of Jeremiah speaks about the judgment that God is bringing on the Israelites through the Babylonians. He actually doesn't tell them until about chapter 19 that he's going to bring judgment by the Babylonians. And we see the long-suffering of God in this. For the first 19 chapters of Jeremiah, he just tells them of their apostasy and their falling away, how they've turned to Baal. And he tells them that he's going to destroy them. He doesn't actually tell them that it's going to be through the king of Babylon until chapter 20. But look at chapter 33 in verse 10. And here now, the Lord is speaking about his house that's laid waste. In verse 10, chapter Jeremiah 33, verse 10, he says, "Thus saith Jehovah, again there shall be heard in this place, which ye say shall be desolate." He's speaking of the desolations that are going to be brought on Israel. And that word desolate is the word lie waste in Haggai there. Let me start this again in verse 10. "Thus saith Jehovah, again there shall be heard in this place, which ye say shall be desolate, without man and without beast, even in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, that are desolate, without man and without inhabitant and without beast, the voice of joy and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, the voice of them that shall say, Praise Jehovah of hosts, for Jehovah is good, for his mercy endureth forever, and of them that shall bring the sacrifice of praise into the house of Jehovah. For I will cause to return the captivity of the land, as at the first, saith Jehovah. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, again in this place which is desolate, without man and without beast." He says that three times. He links desolate to being without man and without beast. He's sending the Israelites into captivity. That land's going to be desolate, but he's going to bring his people back. And again, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride are going to be there. The voice of truth going out. Certainly Christ is the bridegroom and the church is the bride. But that's what we're looking at here in Haggai 1, verse 4. He says, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste?" Haggai 1, verse 5 says, "Now therefore thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways." That literally means set your heart on your ways. And then in verse 6 he says, "Ye have sown much and bring in little. Ye eat, but ye have not enough. Ye drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes." This is tribulation language. This is speaking of the judgment that God has brought on the Israelites. There's no fruit coming from his land. Turn back to Deuteronomy 28. Most of you are familiar with Deuteronomy 28, that after verse 15, it goes on for about 50 verses talking about, and it's terrible language, frightful language, talking about judgment. Again, that God will bring, he's admonishing them here. He's telling them what's going to happen if they depart from his ways and from his word. But in Deuteronomy 28, verse 38, we read, Deuteronomy 28, 38, let me start in verse 36. Deuteronomy 28:36. "Jehovah shall bring thee and thy king, which thou hast set over thee, unto a nation which neither thou nor thy fathers have known. And there shalt thou serve other gods, wood and stone. And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations, whither Jehovah shall lead thee. Thou shalt carry," and this is what we're, now this is just like we're reading in Haggai. "Thou shalt carry much seed out into the field, and shall gather but little in, for the locust shall consume it." Judgment. In tribulation, verse 39, "Thou shalt plant vineyards and dress them, but shall neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worm shall eat them." Thou shalt have olive trees throughout all thy coast, but thou shalt not anoint thyself with the oil, for thine olive shall cast his fruit. Thou shalt beget sons and daughters, but thou shalt not enjoy them, for they shall go into captivity. All thy trees and fruit of thy land shall the locust consume. This is what he's telling them is going on here in Haggai, in verse 6. So he says again in verse 7 of Haggai 1, Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, Consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build a house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. Now, if you read in a commentary where he says, go up to the mountain and bring wood, I think Matthew Henry says this is talking about going up to the mountains and cut the trees and bring the wood back to build the house. I don't believe that's what he's saying. I think he's saying it's as in Isaiah chapter 2. Look at Isaiah chapter 2. The house is actually at the top of that mountain, and the Israelites are to bring the wood up that mountain to build that house. Isaiah 2, verse 1 says, The word that Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house, that the mountain of Jehovah's house, shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow unto it. I think that's the sense of it, that mountain, that God has set his city on a hill. In Matthew 5:14, he says, You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Or in Psalm 48, verse 1, Psalm 48, verse 1 says, Great is Jehovah and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, in the mountain of his holiness. And here Haggai now is telling the Israelites to bring wood and go up to that mountain and build the house. And what is the wood? Who is the wood? We are, if we're part of that house. We know that Solomon, when he began to build that temple, got fir trees and cedar trees and almond trees from Hiram, king of Tyre, and it's all figures of people. The different woods in the Bible have different spiritual significances if you'll study them, but it all has to do with people being brought in to become part of that house. So we read that in 1 Corinthians 3, if any man build on this foundation, wood, hay or stubble and such. Look at Psalm 96. Psalm 96, let me start in verse 10 of Psalm 96. Say among the heathen that Jehovah reigneth. The world also shall be established, that it shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. Let the heavens rejoice, and let the earth be glad. Let the sea roar, and the fullness thereof. Let the field be joyful, and all that is therein. Then shall all the trees of the wood rejoice. We read in Isaiah that the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Or we read in Psalm 1 that the godly man will be like a tree planted by the waters. So this is the wood that Haggai is speaking of to the Israelites. Go and get that wood and bring it up to that mountain and build the Lord's house. All of you are involved in that as you're organizing these track trips or going on these track trips. You've got these vans or signs all over your cars. You're giving of your wherewithal, your material wherewithal to a faithful, to what you consider a faithful ministry or a faithful way to get that gospel out. Many of you do a lot of praying. That's part of it. That's part of it. You're all being used of God, if you're a child of God, to bring wood and to build that mountain. You're going out and being used to bring in the lost sheep, the house of Israel. That's what we're reading here. Let me read verse 8 of Haggai 1 again. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it. And I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. That's the bottom line, isn't it? It's all to the glory of God. He says, I will take pleasure in it. Look at Psalm 149. Psalm 149, Psalm 149, verse 4 says, For Jehovah taketh pleasure in his people. He will beautify the meek with salvation. He takes pleasure in his people. Back here again in Haggai 1, verse 8, Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. Ye looked for much, and lo, it came to little. Again, now he's speaking of how he has judged his people. And when he brought it home, I did blow upon it. Why, saith Jehovah of hosts, because of mine house that is waste, and ye run every man unto his own house. Again, he's repeating that same principle of every man running to his own house, while the house of God, the true house, is lying waste. When he says, I did blow upon it, that's... that has to do again with the judgment of God. We won't develop that, but again, it's just this language of how God has judged and judged His people and His church. Verse 10, he goes on. He says, "Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and dew is a blessing. Dew helps the herbs and the flowers and the grass to grow." But the heaven is stayed from the dew. God uses dew in the Bible the same way He uses water. It's a figure of the gospel. He says in verse 11, I called for a drought upon the land, and the land, we just spoke about the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine. Again, figures of the gospel. And upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. Now we read in verse 12, Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of Jehovah their God. Now, when God speaks of the remnant in the Bible, often He's speaking of the true believers. Look at Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23 and verse 1 says, Woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith Jehovah. Therefore, thus saith Jehovah God of Israel, Against the pastors that feed my people, ye have scattered my flock and driven them away, and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith Jehovah, and I will gather the remnant. I will gather the remnant, that's the elect, of my flock out of all countries whither I have driven them, and will bring them again to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase. So back here in Haggai 1, verse 12, we read about the remnant of the people. In the middle of that verse, it says, They obeyed the voice of Jehovah their God, and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him, and the people did fear before the Lord. Then spake Haggai, Jehovah's messenger, and Jehovah's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith Jehovah. And Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of Jehovah of hosts, their God. Now, it says, back there in verse 12, that the remnant obeyed the voice of Jehovah their God and the words of Haggai the prophet as Jehovah their God had sent him. We read about the prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, prophesying as this building was going on, encouraging them. Let me see if I can... Yeah, look. Turn back to Ezra 5. Ezra 5. In the last verse of Ezra 4, We're reading about what's happening in Haggai now, again, that the work began again in the second year of Darius. Ezra 4, verse 24 says, "Then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem." This is when the people hindered them. But then he says, "So it ceased unto the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia." That's what we're reading about here in Haggai. But chapter 5, verse 1 of Ezra says, "Then the prophets Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them." And look at Ezra 6 in verse 14. As the Jews are building again, we read in Ezra 6 verse 14, "And the elders of the Jews builded, and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo, and they builded and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel," and so forth. But again, this is applied all through time to all the people of God that are building that temple, as it were, that are doing the work of God, that God encourages us and strengthens us with his word. That's what these prophets are a picture of here. Look at Psalm 56. Psalm 56, verse 1, says, "Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O thou Most High. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me." That's why many of you people want to be in this fellowship every Sunday morning. Not that you have to be here. Not that you're meriting anything by showing up every Sunday morning. It's just that you're encouraged by the Word. We have weaknesses, and the flesh is fighting us, but we're encouraged as we stay in the Word. And again, that's what Haggai and Zechariah are doing here as the people of the Lord are building that temple, are doing that work. You can, all through the Psalms, there are passages like that. All right, back here again in Haggai 1, in verse 13, it says, "Then spake Haggai, Jehovah's messenger, in Jehovah's message unto the people, saying, I am with you." That's the word Emmanuel, saith Jehovah. And verse 14, "And Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of Jehovah of hosts, their God, in the 24th day of the sixth month, in the second year of Darius the king." Now remember that the prophecy, Haggai began to speak to them in the first day of the month, and in the 24th day of the month, that's when the people began to work. We're outside now of that formal official tribulation period, but still, this is a picture of that tribulation period, because that temple is still in ruins, and a lot of the Israelites are still in captivity. Notice the timing, how God references the time in chapter 1, verse 1. It's not according to a Hebrew king. It's in the second year of Darius the king. We're still looking at tribulation here, but it's 23 days after the Lord comes to them, admonishes them, because they're saying the time has not come for the Lord's house to be built. 23 days later, they begin to work, and that's a picture, again, of the latter rain period, when God's people, again, with God's blessing, begin to do his work. There's another time period in chapter 2. Maybe if I'm absolutely convicted of what this is saying, I'll speak about this next time. Because in chapter 2, he says, "In the seventh month, in the 21st day of the month, came the word of Jehovah by the prophet Haggai, saying," and then that period ends in the 24th day of the ninth month. And you would think, going by 30-day months, that's 63 days. But I've been told by a couple guys that are excellent with timelines, excellent with timing in the Bible, that that's 61 days. 61 days. It corresponds. And the language of chapter 2, again, corresponds with this time period we're in now. God's people are working, but the church is utterly dead. Satan's there. And God continues to rebuke them in this chapter. And then he ends that. He ends this chapter 2, speaking of the judgment, which we're going to see begin on May the 21st. But I'm not utterly convicted of that yet. Again, a lunar cycle is 29 and a half days. And I have to go over again how that priest determined when that first day of the month started. And I've been told this time period in chapter 2 is 61 days. So you have 23 days or 2,300 days in chapter 1 and 61 days or 6,100 days, which add up to 8,400 days of the tribulation period in chapter 2. But again, it's all to the glory of God. It all speaks of God's salvation. And the utter sovereignty God has in salvation, how he's going to save a remnant. He's going to bring his people out of Babylon. They've gone through this tribulation, and it is God's people that are doing the work of the Lord. They're the ones that are truly being used to build this house, to go out and to bring people in. Again, to God be the glory. It's all about the mercy of God. It's all about his long-suffering. If you read through Jeremiah, the long-suffering of God is incredible. As we read in Jeremiah, for years he told them, admonished them over and over, turn from your ways, I'm going to bring judgment. And finally he did. In God's mercy, it still is a day of salvation. We still have 8 months or so left. The time left doesn't mean anything. God can save in an instant, whenever he wants. We know that by looking at that thief on the cross. But there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do, but we're still commanded in the Bible to seek God for this salvation. And we know that man instinctively knows that judgment's coming. Man instinctively knows what's right and wrong. He instinctively knows that there's a God, and he is a merciful God. And all we can do, if we're not sure we have eternal life, is just to continue to cry out to him. There's nowhere else we can go. Shall we pray? Heavenly